listeners, welcome to a bonus episode of Times Will Tell. I'm Amanda Borchel-Dan, bringing you an archaeology story of an item that, if verified, may be one of the top discoveries of the century. On Thursday, March 24th, Scott Stripling held a press conference in Houston, Texas, unveiling what he claims is the earliest proto-alphabetic Hebrew text discovered in ancient Israel. He claims he has discovered a 2-centimeter by 2-centimeter tiny folded lead cursed tablet, or defixio, that he dates to the late Bronze Age, before or around 1200 BCE. If this dating is verified, it would make the text centuries older than the previous record holder. But there are some challenges, of course. It was discovered outside of stratificial context in 2019 while his team was re-examining a dump pile from 1980s excavations at Mount Ebal that were held then under Professor Adam Zertal. The earth had been dry sifted then, and in 2019, Stripling's team re-sifted it in a wet sifting technique that was developed at the Temple Mount Sifting Project where Stripling once worked. But in the course of these examinations, of course, the historical layers were all mixed up. The folded interior of the tablet underwent high-tech scans recently in a lab in Prague at the Academy of Sciences of the Czech Republic. The dating of the tiny tablet is mostly based on epigraphical analysis of these scans, along with analysis of the lead and potential ancient sources for it. The scans were read by a few epigraphers, including Haifa University professor Gershon Galil, and Stripling says it holds 40 Proto-Hebrew letters. The reading includes the words rrr, cursed, and yud-heh-vav-heh, which is an acronym for God. If verified, this could be the earliest mention of God in the borders of ancient Israel. The problem is, Stripling has not released images, and the tablet has not been published in a peer-reviewed journal. So the academic community still has to weigh in. But in the meantime, you can hear what Stripling has to say about it here. Hi, Scott. Thank you so much for joining me. Please tell me about this new discovery. But first of all, I would like to know, why are you publishing it now?
Hi, Amanda. Good morning from Texas, and good afternoon or good evening in Israel. You and I talked about this over 2 years ago. We did the project on Mount Ebal, what we called the Mount Ebal dump salvage. And then we did it was one of the first podcasts I think that you were doing, and we talked about it. And now, since December 2019, a lot has happened. The world turned upside down and is now apparently turning back again. We were not able to do the scientific testing for a while because I couldn't get back into Israel and I didn't have access to, you know, the things that I needed. But I was able to get in a few months ago and get our folded lead tablet that we had recovered, get it to Prague to be tested. Actually, a good friend of mine, Zvi Konigsberg, was kind enough to courier it back and forth to Prague. And we have now completed testing on the lead. Epigraphic analysis, paleographic epigraphic analysis. So we do have an inscription and we have been able to recover it using tomographic scanning, and we can see the inside of the tablet and the outside of the tablet. So we are nearing completion of an academic article on this, which will be out hopefully in this summer. And so we are at the point now that we were ready to go public with a press conference and let everybody know the exciting news of what we found.
Okay, there have been rumors about this amulet for, you know, a very long time, and several outlets have already published preview articles about it. I guess my question is, why are you publishing now before the academic article is going out, in which we can get more expert opinion from different people outside the research?
All right. Well, we will do both. This is stage one. Often what happens in academia is that when these new findings, for example, are coming out, other people can publish your work without your awareness and knowledge and permission. And so this is often what we do to get out in front of something, to make an announcement where it's clear who the collaborators are, what we're doing, what the findings are, and what's coming down the pike.
Okay, so let's roll it back a little bit, because that is the burning question. Obviously, why now? So what is the next burning question? And we're talking about a defixio, a curse tablet that is 2 centimeters by 2 centimeters, folded lead, that you have dated, somewhat controversially as well, also to the late Bronze era. So first of all, let's talk about the dating, which is a big red flag for anyone, obviously. So how are you dating it with any kind of certainty to begin with?
Well, I smile when you said with controversy. There's always controversy, of course, in archaeology, but we haven't even released it yet. And now there's already controversy. Someone said yesterday, well, this is clearly a fake. I said, you haven't even seen it yet. How can you get declare it a fake?
Because they read about it on eBay and bought a copy. No, stop. Just kidding, kidding, kidding.
Well, I wish I was smart enough to be able to write in an ancient Hebrew script on the inside of this folded lead tablet. I guess you're asking, how did we arrive at this date of the late Bronze, too? So a couple of ways. As we begin to see letters, the first one we saw was an aleph. And it was the very ancient form of the aleph, which is an ox head. And that's what we would call, some call it a proto-Canaanite. I would call it a proto-alphabetic letter. It's before Paleo-Hebrew. And there are many parallels for this. And then we saw more alephs, and they were all of the same style. And then we begin to see reshes, also in a very ancient style. So all in all, Amanda, we recovered 40 letters, 40, on the inside and outside of the tablet, and they were all in this proto-alphabetic script, which dates to that, to the late Bronze Age.
So based on the script, you're dating the item? Is that how you're saying?
Okay. Right. So that's where the epigraphers come in. And so the epigraphers in my collaboration are Gershon Galil, who's an Israeli from Haifa University, and Peter van der Veen, who is a German and also did his PhD in epigraphic studies. And so working together with them, it was obvious from the beginning that this was very ancient. But we had to be very careful and go through the whole process. But in the end, there's no other way. It doesn't fit in any other time period. Secondly, to reinforce that, or maybe two other things to reinforce that, we were able to test the lead. And Professor Naama Yahalom-Mak from Hebrew University did the testing on the lead. And the source of the lead was from Greece. And from a part of Greece, the mines are known there from this. And this is, of course, what the experts go from. And the was used in various time periods, including the Late Bronze II period. So other lead is known from there during the Late Bronze II period. So when you take the epigraphic analysis plus the lead analysis, and then the archaeological context of what Adam Zertal excavated at Mount Ebal, you have, it was a late Bronze site, an LB2 site. So archaeological context, analysis of the lead, and epigraphic analysis would be how we arrived at the date.
We'll take a short break now.
I got married this Monday in the middle of a war.
You are not a soldier anymore. You are 50 years old. What is the matter with you?
It's like a couple of kilometers from here. Like, my friend has a 4x4. Let's just go cut across the fields and go get him.
Israel Stories, Wartime Diaries. Voices that try to capture slivers of life right now.
And he told me, take with you a sleeping bag and a tent and just go.
I texted him after I was told that he was killed.
From their eyes, I was a traitor.
Everybody needs their, like, blankie, their teddy bear, something to make them feel safe.
I'm just another grandfather looking after his grandchild while his son is off at war.
These children of Hamas now will be the killer of my children.
I desperately wanted to talk about sex during my eulogy for Ido.
Everyone has to choose to be optimistic because we don't have room for pessimism.
Check out Israel Story wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Okay, now the archaeological context is so much problematic because you're not actually taking it out of the earth, meaning digging it out of the earth. You're taking it out of the earth, but you're not digging it up yourself. Instead, explain for our listeners how and in what kind of context or mound you found this particular item.
We wet sifted about 30% of Adam Professor Zertal's, the late Professor Zertal's dumps. There were two large dumps, one in the east and one in the west. Like all digs, of course, after they examine material, then they have a dump pile. And then there was a third central dump. We knew from his notes that the material from the what he believed were altars. I think most people have accepted that now. A large rectangular altar with a smaller round altar at the perfect geometric center of it that it was covering. That material went into the east dump. And so we kept track of, we were wet sifting, was the material from the east or the west dump. This came from the east dump. And as you said, it was a small 2x2 centimeter folded lead tablet. As soon as I saw it, I knew what it was because these are known. I mean, my heart almost jumped out of my chest. These are more commonly known in the late Hellenistic period, okay? And but the thing is that Zertal didn't publish any material from early Roman and late Hellenistic. It was all late Bronze and Iron One material.
Can you remind our listeners what years we're talking about in terms of actual numbers instead of eras?
Yes, I'm sorry. Generally, when we talk about late Bronze II, we're talking about 1400 to 1200 BC, and Iron Age I from about 1200 to 1000 BC in round terms.
And the Hellenistic period, as opposed to that, is?
Okay, so 3rd century, 2nd century BC, 3rd, 2nd century BC. And there, so many of them are known from that period. That didn't, of course, mean that they did not exist earlier, because there are archaic examples of them. But that was my immediate quandary, was like, okay, I know these are common in the late Hellenistic period, but the archaeological context is not Hellenistic at all, or early Roman as far as that goes. And so it wasn't until we began to see the script that predated Paleo-Hebrew script. And so you're talking about older than the Caiapha Ostracon. You're talking about hundreds of years older than previously known Hebrew script. So there's no way that that could have been written in the Hellenistic period 1,000 years later.
Unless they're doing some kind of throwback Thursday effort at the script.
Yeah, right. All things are possible. But, you know, it would be like me trying to write Old English or something like that. You know, it's just a very different ballgame.
Okay. Now, you have released very few images, so far at least, and it's very difficult to get a sense of what is actually written inside until we actually see the images. You have released a photograph of the outside of the amulet, which I can't see anything because I'm not trained in anything, basically. And we have nothing from the inside. What have you seen in terms of what has been recovered from the still folded amulet? It's not as if you've unfolded it. You're having scans from the inside, which is technology we know about from other things such as the En Gedi, what is it, a mezuzah from En Gedi? Remind me. Yes. So what have you seen with your own eyes? What are you seeing?
So it was astounding when we began to see these letters because we were looking at them independently, Peter Gershon and I. And we were just astounded because we were seeing the same things. 40 Hebrew letters, 11 of them are Alephs. And of course, Aleph is the first letter in the Hebrew word Arur, which means to curse. And Mount Ebal is famous, of course, because in the Bible, this was the mountain of the curse. They pronounce blessings from Mount Gerizim, curses from Mount Ebal. In Joshua 8:30, he built an altar on Mount Ebal. So the idea that you had a curse tablet, before we even begin to recover text, in my perfect world, in my mind, you know, people are saying, well, what would you want it to say? I would say, well, you know, a curse from Mount Ebal, of course, would be so amazing. And indeed, that's what we had. So the first word that we could clearly see was Arur. And so you have the word curse appears multiple times, and you even have the name Yahweh. That appears twice. And this is mind-boggling, phenomenal, because found in Israel in this early time period, this forces a rethinking of early Israelite presence and, you know, when were the scriptures written? You know, was there the literacy abilities and things like this? And, you know, when we release the full text, scholars can have at it and decipher. Maybe they read it differently than we did, but we're reading it as a formulaic curse, as sort of a self-imprecatory curse, if you will, which is how covenants were made in the Late Bronze Age. So the point four of a covenant in the Late Bronze Age was a self-binding curse. So if I keep the terms of the covenant, these blessings will come upon me. If I don't, these curses will come upon me. So very consistent with what we read in the biblical text.
I'm sure you've shown this to several people by now, even outside of your circle. What have you had any blowback at all from anyone who is at all expert in the field?
No, but I guess the blowback can begin now that we are releasing some of the text, and which I welcome, of course. We want that level of analysis. And I don't know how it will be disputable that this is a proto-alphabetic script that dates older than anything found in Israel. That I don't understand how somebody could build. Now, they could argue, well, that's not really a resh, it's a vav or something like that. That's fine, because some of the letters are very clear. Some of them are not so clear as it goes on inscriptions. But we expect a healthy exchange of ideas.
That's putting it very mildly, I would assume. Okay, talking a little bit more about the proto-alphabetic script, there are other examples from elsewhere. What is the comparison being based upon?
So those are the parallels. So for each letter, we have the parallels that have been found at other sites of this proto-alphabetic script, or some would call it proto-Sinaitic script, some proto-Canaanite script, but I'm just using a more generic term, proto-alphabetic. For example, Sinai 375a, the Serebet el-Havim, in the turquoise mines in the Sinai, you have this type of script that appears that is dated to the Late Bronze Age. So that would be an example of a parallel, yeah.
So you feel secure that this is the same era, 100%?
Well, we've tried to, in English, dot every I, cross every T. I guess in Hebrew I could say dot every, I don't know, oxhead or something. But I think so.
Okay, fantastic. I just want to say to you, let the games begin, because I know it's going to cause such an uproar that we'll be hearing about this in the news, at least, and if not in academic circles for quite a while. So really, thank you for spending the time with me, and good luck.
Thank you, Amanda. Appreciate you having me.
Thanks so much for listening to Times Will Tell from the Times of Israel, and thanks to our producer, Gilad Brownstein.
Please subscribe wherever you find your podcasts and check out our daily briefing news show every Sunday through Thursday.
Like what you hear? Consider rating us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to spread the word.
Until next week.
Shalom.